Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9 coming to you live from Austin, Texas. This is Chef Conf, and we have a number of guests helping us understand a lot about Chef, a lot about DevOps, and a lot about how to change your organization to make these things work. So tell us who you are and what you do. We'll start here.
Sure. So I'm John Carey, doomed to Google obscurity.
John Carey. Yeah. I was going to say a joke, but you did it for
me. Yeah, he approves this message.
Thank you.
I had to bring it out because it's natural.
We have John Carey here. Loved you in that one movie.
I wear flip-flops.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I lead a DevOps team in the hospitality section of NCR.
Okay.
The team is of size 2, but we integrate really tightly with our development teams. So really, we're the DevOps architecture team for my portion of NCR Online Ordering.
Awesome.
And I'm Michael Hedgepeth. I work with John within hospitality to roll out and realize our vision for automation for DevOps within hospitality.
So, but you're not in the same, like, if you were to look at your organizational structure, you're not even close, right?
No.
We didn't even know each other 18 months ago.
Did you guys just like meet in a bar or something? Like, hey, we should chat? Or how did this all come out? Let's first talk about what your company does and what's the stuff you work on, and then how you two sort of came together to sort of make it better. So what do you make? Let's start with here.
Sure. So my portion is online ordering. So we create the website, the sales, to enable sales of food online. We've got a number of fairly large customers, and our primary product lately has been mostly APIs.
Okay.
So NCR is an omni-channel business. Michael can probably tell you a little bit more about
that. Yeah, that sounds like a fancy business word.
Yeah, the developers didn't come up with that.
Yeah, what does that mean? I got all confused.
Yeah, so 135 years ago, NCR invented the cash register, which revolutionized retail.
Is that when you started?
Yes. National cash register.
Nice. That's really cool, actually.
Yeah. So we had one channel that we were providing to our customers through that technology at the time. And that's worked for a long time, but there have been multiple channels in the past 30 years. Like, think about it, a restaurant, you saw the drive-in lane for the to-go, takeout, or whatever. And restaurateurs are now having to deal with channels coming all over the place. And so John's product creates an API so that people can write a mobile ordering app, they can do a lot of previously unimaginable things to get these orders into these restaurants so that our customers will be able to serve any customer from any vantage point that they want.
So when you say channels, you mean like
sales
channels. You're going to find a way to literally, not necessarily literally, but virtually maybe open a cash register, do a transaction and say, yep, they got the money, and yes, you're going to get your thing.
Yeah, so the way it works is we have the point of sale at the restaurant, and we have a secure system to get to that point of sale. That's PCI compliant and everything, and then John has an API sitting on the other side of that mechanism that people can do orders with. But it really, literally, at the end of it, rings up an order on our point of sale and prints a ticket, and then the restaurant makes it and gets it ready for the customer to come right in and pick it right up.
And you were going to say something. Sorry.
Yeah. That's the differentiating factor for our business, because NCR has the point of sale. Right, you're not just submitting the order to the site. It's not going to show up as an email, right? It fires at the back of the house, right? I'm going to be here at 3, so you should start cooking at 2:45, and it should be ready when I get there.
Interesting, because there's a timing aspect to this.
Right. If there's a tomato shortage in the Midwest, and suddenly you need to up the price on tomatoes by a fraction to cover your cost across your entire fleet of franchises, right? You know, we've got the capability of detecting that data and updating our prices so that you don't get hit by a failure to update.
And this is like, now that I'm understanding what's going on, this is fairly complex. It's not like you're adding a PayPal button, effectively.
Yeah.
It's actually going into your back-end systems. It's looking at what you may or may not have. It's allowing you to make certain changes to sort of reflect the business changes. And there's the aspect of food goes bad, which is even worse, right? Because you have to have this timing. So what part, you're on the business side of this product, right?
No, actually I'm within the development organization, centrally to try to do this for all of our products. So this is just one product. We have a loyalty product, we have a real-time stats product for store managers, just all the entire operations and engagement of customers for restaurateurs. Mm-hmm. We provide an entire software solution for that. So I'm working kind of centrally to try to map out what our vision is, and John is working on just the product that we've been talking about, the API into the store. And we met for the first time at a chef proof of concept where we were trying to see if Chef would really work for us within our organization on top of the Microsoft stack that we've already invested into.
So let's talk a little bit about the, because obviously you, when you're looking at technologies like Chef or other kinds of DevOps technology, there's a certain pain that you felt that you wanted to solve. Why don't we talk about the pain that you felt and sort of how you went through solving it?
Sure, yeah. So when the call went out for a prototype with Chef, you know, we were there, right?
Nice.
Totally. And the reason being is when we looked at our data and we understood where our business was going, we knew the hockey stick was coming.
Yeah.
Right. We were going to explode. We had a number of large customers that had gone through friends and family pilots, and they were really going to invest in us, and we needed to be ready for that scale. And the tools that we had for configuration management and I guess operational environment management were not suitable to that level of scale. They worked for us now, or at the time,
sure.
But they just weren't ready for what we knew we were going to be at. So we started to look at our reality and say, what can we do? Configuration management's a great way to handle this, but what can we do to be ready so that when the emergency does come, and we do need twice the scale in our data center in a weekend, how can we be ready to solve that? So we were really forward-looking.
And that's interesting because you say we have twice the scale on the weekend. For restaurants, that's where you're going to get all of a sudden all these hits, and if they can't charge, there's a problem.
Exactly.
So you usually come from the perspective of the requirements, but usually as a dev, those things come top down and we're just like, oh gosh, what is this thing? But you started working together on this.
Yeah, so online ordering very early became highly involved. Our development organization became really involved in how things looked operationally. Now, we're a very secure product, PCI certified, so I'm not actually allowed to touch production servers, but I can develop with the notion that I can make things better operationally. So we have a history of doing this for a while, but at some point we said, you know, we need a change. We need to make sure that change is not just for online ordering. We need to be able to propagate that as a model to other components inside NCR because we're not the only people with these problems.
Right.
And that got us looking around, and Michael had, you know, a training session with Chef on how to do this with Chef, and we jumped on it right away.
What were some of the things that you saw after this training session or during the training session that you thought, boy, we could really use this and this and this aspect? What were some of the things that sort of turned you on to Chef?
Well, I realized that we're going to have to build more and more machines into the future as we really realize scale with John's product. And then also we realized that we needed to standardize how we manage these machines in the first place and get people out of the business of manually configuring changes on machines. And so if we were able to do that, we could realize the growth that we were expecting within this sector and give our customers the even more of a deep partnership with us as a solution provider for their technology. Because you think about a restaurateur doesn't grow up wanting to write an API. Or they're not technologists first, and so they need a partner like us. They live and breathe it every day and can provide that to them with trust. And the only way that we know to provide that trust is through automation, and DevOps is a great model for it.
So let's talk a little about sort of your software stack. What does it look like? Because it's got to be fairly complex, especially with the kind of scale that you're looking to do. So tell us a little about your stack and sort of the challenges that you knew you were going to have as you needed to scale.
Sure, so we're an end-tier application. We've got a web tier and an application tier. Mm-hmm. As well as some asynchronous and scheduled task processors. It's all Windows, SQL Server on
the
back end.
IIS on the front end.
On the front end. Web API is our API interface.
Uh-huh.
And occasionally we will have some Linux utilities as we add, say, Redis caching,
sure,
or Elasticsearch for document processing.
So as you're managing for scale, all of a sudden there's tons of disparate things in disparate environments.
Right, and many environments of different scale. So
yeah.
It's interesting, after investing in deployment and delivery automation, we found that the number of environments that we managed just blew through the roof. Right, before we get, you know, single dev, QA, pre-prod and production.
Right.
About the time that we were getting into this, we were scaling to international production environments. We manage probably close to 13 or 14 individual environments, and that grows by the day.
And you found that
different sizes.
And you found that Chef helps with this. How?
Once you, deploying to one server is one thing. Deploying two is something completely different. And deploying to 30 after you deployed to two, assuming you've deployed to two the right way, is the same thing. It's not a big deal. So a big part of our talk at ChefConf. But a great success story in this regard is how we handled a recent explosion of traffic from a southeastern chicken provider.
Nice.
Yeah. They came to us and said, you know, you need to expect a very large amount of traffic from us, a number that caused moments of silence. And rather than running to production straight and taking the numbers that we had and scaling up to this huge, like, you know, 10x scale on top of what we already had, we said, we can solve this the right way. Let's use the velocity we gained from Chef to deploy a large performance testing environment that is guaranteed to be production-like since we're doing it with Chef. And let's set up a rapid deployment pipeline to that environment and give our core team the access to do whatever they need to do to improve performance. And a month ahead of the game, we find out we can handle the traffic with our optimizations, given what we already have in production.
And that's got to be comforting to your customer, right?
Certainly.
And say, hey, yeah, we got this. How do you know? Well, we made sure.
What?
How did you make sure? We actually deployed something, and then we ran at it, and it was good.
Right.
Yeah, and they're facing a crisis themselves. In that, you know, so many industries are being disrupted by technology, and they know that they need to innovate themselves. They don't have the skills in-house to be able to do that. And so in this crisis moment, we were able to have a partnership with this customer, and their original goals were to have a certain number of users in 30 days. They made that goal in 11 days because they rolled the product out June 1st, previous June 1st. So they had a massive explosion of orders. It was totally fine on our infrastructure with online ordering.
The servers didn't sweat.
Yeah.
Right. We were actually over-provisioned for that load.
And
like
about,
between you, me, and the universe, I was preparing my family for me to not be there for a month.
Oh,
right?
Like, God.
I expected the midnight death march towards release day. A month out, we're sitting there in the room, and we look at the same number that was on the board a month previously and go, I guess we're done, right?
Wow,
we're ready for it.
And usually when things are being pushed to prod, we're all like, okay, I'm gonna stay up. You know, I gotta have my beeper on. I should just stay at the office. You had that panic. Well, it wasn't even panic. You had that preparation a month before.
Right, and it was the first real big proving ground for DevOps and Chef inside NCR. This is the moment we can point to and say, not only can we do this, because we had done it before, mm-hmm. but we can do it at scale, and we can save the business money doing it.
Wow. So here's a question. It obviously can't all be unicorns and rainbows, you know? There had to have been some challenges when you were first thinking about doing this, and then when you were actually implementing it. What are some of the challenges that we should look out for as developers and IT professionals that we need to know about before we start to make these kinds of changes? We'll start with you.
Yeah, so our challenge initially was coming to a conference like this or watching online videos of DevOps, getting the great vision. That's awesome. But our challenge was trying to break that down into bite-sized pieces and make it so that it wasn't as much of a threat to the organization.
Right.
We realized that just people were not going to consume this just entire change overnight. And so then what John and I did was we broke down what we needed to do to solve specific business problems that online ordering was having that were key to our business, that were key to our customers and our partnership with them. And focusing on those, and you know, even kind of cut corners on the rest of the vision to try to, you know, create that impetus for change and then iterate on that over and over again.
I like how you focused on sort of the business value.
Absolutely.
Here's a business value we have, value A. How can we make that better? And you use sort of the tooling to sort of help make that better until you went to the next one.
Right.
It's very easy when you're implementing this kind of change to get into a position where you cannot justify value any further. It's right. Like, hey, I'm going to do the DevOps for you, and it's going to be awesome, and you'll see the benefit in a year. Trust me. I'll put my job on the line. right? I don't want to put myself in that position. I don't want to put you in that position
right.
either. So the biggest takeaway that I would take from our experience is to always focus on business problems and the most important business problem. And if you have a greater vision, try to do it in a way that supports that vision. If you have to cut corners while you do it, that's okay. You know you're going to pay for it.
Right.
But now you generate the credibility and the value by making sure that your customers succeed.
So how much of this is a business or organizational cultural change versus a process change versus a tooling change? Is it, because obviously you're talking about Chef like it was the magic unicorn, but my sense is that as an organization, maybe your culture sort of enabled that kind of thing. So culturally, what does your organization have to look like to make this work? What kind of processes did you have to put in place? And then obviously you have that tooling among others that were helping. So let's talk about the culture change, if you had any. What was that like? We'll start here.
So John and I both come from development backgrounds. And so he had been working with operations and security much more than I had. So at the beginning, he was kind of acting as a translator for me. I was sort of marching in, saying, this is going to be an awesome change, let's do this. And culturally speaking, operations and security viewed that as another developer coming up with another possibly crazy and destructive idea.
Right.
And so that was what part of that breaking down into bite-sized pieces was about, was let's know there's going to be a massive change within operations and security to accept the DevOps reality, but how can we make that massive change digestible over time so that people can get on board? And when we got into that mode, it was much better than I think trying to be developers, developer-ish when facing DevOps.
So how do you break this up into sort of a bite-sized chunk that people digest? How do you sell this change in your organization?
Yeah, so what I do with teams, and I think John was a great first example of this, is we start out with what is the story that we want to tell at the end of this? What outcome are we trying to create? What problem do you have that we're going to solve? And actually, if we don't come up with that story, we don't come up with that outcome, we're not going any further.
Right.
And so you start with that outcome, and then how can we break up that outcome into smaller pieces that can maybe show progress?
Sure.
And then just like an agile type of thing, let's create iterations, let's create those changes small bits at a time until we deliver that outcome. And then when we deliver that outcome, we celebrate just like an agile and maybe have a demo or whatever mm-hmm. to show the business the reality of the change that we made.
What about from the developer like down in the trenches? What kind of cultural change needs to happen in order for these things to work?
It's been really good. I think if you take your change and you focus on small enough pieces, and those small pieces really address customer issues, the cultural change will come with your tooling change. You don't have to force both. It'll happen together. So a good example of this is integration into CI, using Chef to enable expansions of our CI pipeline early on mm-hmm. and really invert control. So before we had a model where a developer would check in a change, that change would get built and tested after the check-in occurs. And if it failed, the red alert went out, right? Master is broken, someone needs to fix it. But it would immediately turn into finger pointing.
Right.
Like who, especially if multiple changes came in at the same time, who in the last hour and a half broke the build? Right? Everyone put on your Indiana Jones hat and figure it out. Using Chef and inverting that and being able to deploy and test before the check-in removes the culture of blame and creates an environment where failure is okay. And your failure is isolated from my failure. And it's okay because I get feedback immediately. It's actually informative and it helps me define, really my development practices on my teams.
And like as a developer, I would be like, yeah, I'm totally for that. I don't want to break the build. That's like a cone of shame for us developers, right? We don't want that. And so how did you use Chef to do that? Or what tools did you use to make that possible?
Jenkins is a continuous integration platform. PowerShell all over the place. Saki actually drives a lot of our build processes. And we continuously deliver and continuously deploy to a testing environment. We actually have so many environments now that we had to start naming them after Nick Cage movies.
Right.
So Con Air is the CI environment.
And does that mean that every third server is actually really good, every third environment?
I think so. National Treasure 1, National Treasure 2, National Treasure 3.
Yeah.
No, Chef made it consistent.
Nice.
Right. Nice. Yeah, so we continuously deliver to this environment. We're really integrating with our QA. This is a new thing for us. We're really working on meshing with our QA and automated testing teams to add as much value before that check-in as possible. So now we block check-ins on unit tests and linting. We're moving into a position where we're really going to do full deployments, performance testing. We've carved out boxes for other teams. If you have a customer escalation, you want to make sure it never happens again, that's awesome. Put it in Jenkins. You'll never have to deal with it again.
And that's interesting, right? Because now what you're doing is you're moving the operations side, not all of it, but like a little sliver of it, just for your feature, to the dev. And the dev is like, okay, I'm running this. It's
and
deploying.
And they want it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they totally want it.
Well, because, I mean, I don't want to look like a fool. Well, it happens quite often.
Yeah, they're not complaining anymore. They used to be complaining about those people. But one of the tricks that you make with DevOps is you make those people you now. As a development team, you take something like security and compliance, and you say, okay, well, make your QA environment secure now, and here are the automated processes around that, or this is the operational reality we expect. Make sure that you deliver that as a part of going into QA with something.
So what an interesting perspective, right? Because now, effectively with, I don't know, what is it that they're using to test it? You're literally carving out virtual machines for them to push this onto?
Yeah, so we actually have what I jokingly call the wall of dead developers. It's old developer boxes that we use for rapid CI deployments. So if you need virtual machines, we'll just spin up a bunch with a standard template. Use Chef to turn them into whatever we need to and then test on.
And you're using this as a check-in guard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's crazy, right? Because traditionally, you check things in, and then stuff happens, because it's going to take the machinery, and it's going to go through, and then the burn, and then they're like, oh, Seth, you broke the build again, and then you have the sign, on your cubicle that says it has been 0 days since I broke the build, that kind of stuff. Yeah. But now what you're doing is you're saying, before we do that, let's put it here.
Right.
Does this require a tremendous amount of infrastructure to do?
Not really. It requires time. The funny thing with build automation before check-in is if you add something new, your life is going to suck for about 3 months. Because as soon as there's you have to make sure that infrastructure is completely stable. If you're at 4 o'clock the night before a sprint ends and a build fails, a check-in fails to go in because your node is acting a little funny, it's a burning critical production emergency for your DevOps team. But once you get that in place and it's stable.
I see. And that will literally prevent you from ever deploying something that's going to break.
What?
Because you're deploying it before you even check the code in.
No. It will prevent you from deploying something that will break in a way that you know.
Okay.
There will always be an emergency, and you will always need to be ready for it. But as soon as it happens, you can ensure that it never happens again.
And it quickens the feedback cycle. So everything that happens is no longer a blame game. It's an opportunity for more automation. You keep that cycle going, and you have less and less problems over time.
So we have about maybe 60 seconds left. Where can people go to find out more about sort of the stuff that you've done, sort of the tips that you have to help operationalize these kinds of things? Maybe you should write a blog, man. This is cool stuff.
I think we should.
Yeah.
So I have a blog. Michael's got a more popular blog.
Oh,
we don't have a post up, but I promise.
Nice,
we'll
I love
get something
it.
Up.
And how did you learn these things? Was it just going to a Chef training, or was it just stuff that you figured out as you went?
I looked at the problems that we had, and I solved just those problems.
See, you're talking to me like a dev, man. I love it. And what about you? Chef's, give us some better speak here.
Yeah, Chef's been a really good partner with us. Their customer success program has been invaluable to help walk John and I through this process. And then just having the right people in place is also huge. John's problem-focused, solution-focused, and so is his team. And it's been a great partnership. To make that happen.
So I love it. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. It's been very informative for me. Thanks so much for watching. We are here at ChefConf in Austin, Texas. It's a little warm here, I'm not going to lie. We'll see you right after the break.